800-580-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next couple hours, you're stuck with me. If you want to talk about cars, now's your chance. The lines are wide open. Gil is the engineer. He's actually the one that's flying the plane. I'm sitting in the first class section just listening to him make mistakes and yelling at me. But we get along pretty good, so it's okay. We've been together for a very, very long time. I think it's been in excess of 5 years. Nevertheless, it's the show every Saturday from 10 to 12 talking about cars. So if you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. It's easy to get in right now because it's the beginning of the show. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is a shop that I can recommend. They're really good at what they do. They are diehard service, repair, and parts. They do foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. They're located at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. They've been around a long time, and you can visit their websites. If you're interested in the hot rod stuff for diesels, then Strictly Diesel would be a good place for you to visit and get some information. Nevertheless, Strictly Diesel, it's a great place, and that's at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Okay, so let me tell you about the day in Mark Salem's life. Yesterday morning, we got up. We're up at the ranch. And 5 o'clock, I'm feeding the horses. Now I got to separate two raunchy geldings, which don't have their male parts. And then I've got Lena, who's a real elderly big bay horse that's given my family and other families, you know, a lot of service. So she's kind of retired. And then I have a little miniature burro named Burita. I got to separate Lena and the burro from the other two and got to feed them separately. Now, the other two, which is Splash and Three Dock, those two have four feeders, but yet they can't decide which one is going to eat where. So they chase one another around for a long time. On the other hand, Lena and Burita, I want you to think of an elephant and a cat. That's the size difference. They're both eating out of the same thing. They have alfalfa and they have senior feed and all that stuff. So then I decided I was going to do yard work here. Yesterday afternoon, my wife Renee had, well, yesterday the whole day, Renee had 16,000 steps. We both carry our phone and we have that stupid app. I had 12,000 and she started teasing me. She forgets that I was on the riding lawnmower for 2 hours. So I said, you know, I think we're probably kind of tied. But I don't think she bought it. But nevertheless, that's kind of what we did all the way up until dark. But one of the other things we did was we have this planter box that's made out of these blocks that stack on top of one another. Well, a gopher had got through this small opening and just made a mess of everything. And so I got one of these gopher. It looks like a road flare. And I put it on a long, flexible stick. And I stuck the stick in there until I found the tunnel, and then I lit it, and I stuck it in there. And it's supposed to send them to gopher heaven very quickly. And so evidently it did, because there was no gopher byproducts at the entrance. So Renee decides she's going to dig inside, and she's going to take that whole wall apart. Big mistake. Take that whole wall apart, and she's going to put a block where he dug in. So we're going to take that hole away, and then he can't. Well, I don't think he's coming back, but in case if his family comes back. When she gets done, it's the most wonderful job I've ever seen. Meanwhile, I'm in the barn working on some of her stuff. So it's just she did a fantastic job. And two things. She didn't scratch a fingernail, and she didn't break a fingernail. So I was pretty doggone impressed. But for the next 3 or 4 hours, she pushed a gasoline-powered vacuum cleaner around the edges of the yard while I drove. And this is a half an acre yard, so I drove the rest of it in the thing, and then we went to dinner, and then we went to bed like at 5:30. I don't remember, but it was early. So that's a day on a Saturday for me. I look forward to the radio show from 10 to 12 because I get to sit down and do nothing, and no one's going to come in and yell at me because the doors are all locked in the studio. So 602-508-0960. There's lots of car repair issues. There's lots of people that have car repair issues. Not too long ago, a lady took her car into a repair shop, and they did a timing belt. And they did a lot of the ancillary parts around the timing belt, because it's a good idea to do the idler pulleys and the tensioner and the belt. And then if you've got any pulleys that are worn, you have to do those. it's a good idea to put it back together kind of new because you don't want to go back in. So most of us try to talk the customer into, let's just replace everything that's there. It's not because we're trying to take advantage of you. It's in your best interest. So this has an ugly end to this story. So they do that. Lady's happy. Lady takes off. Something happens. The belt blows off and bends all the valves. So the engine's hurt bad, and it has like 300,000 miles on it. The engine's hurt bad. So it gets towed in. They take it apart, and they find that one of the brand-new parts they had installed failed, which was an idler pulley. So they contacted the parts vendor, and the parts vendor said, you know, what happened? Hey, we bent the rods. We got to pull the head. We've got a lot of work here that's going to be no less than 1,000, no more than 2,000. Just depends on the damage of the head, not to mention the pistons. So the vendor says, yeah, I got it. Go ahead. Meanwhile, the lady says, well, I'm not quite sure what I want to do. And then she begins to talk about, well, maybe you should buy the car. Maybe you should give me all my money back and buy the car. And the number that she asked for this 300,000-mile car was quite astounding to me. But the shop and the owner, car owner, are about as far apart as Donald Trump and whatever that other guy's name is, Biden. It's just not even close. And so this has the smell of a fire that's getting ready to burn. But let me tell you what I think. First of all, it's important to know that I'm a qualified and certified arbitrator and mediator, and the arbitrator's like a judge. I get to make the decision, and a mediator is trying to get the two parties to come to an agreement. So you can't be both, unless sometimes every once in a while I'll be the mediator, and then we can't get the two parties to agree, and then they'll vote, say, Mark can make the decision. So that's kind of what's going to go on here. We're going to fight back and forth about the customer's needs and the shop's needs. The shop's willing to fix the car and give it back to her, but it doesn't appear that that's part of the agenda or the part of the options that the driver, the owner of the car has. But in reality, just fix it, hand her the keys and say, here. But in reality, she hasn't improved it, even though she's not paying for it. So those are the kinds of sticky things that our industry gets involved in. By the way, 602-508-0960. Other things are that this is a kind of a day in the life of me. So this lady gets involved in a car crash. According to the police department and the police report, it's really minor. Really, really minor. So they send it to the body shop, and the other driver's at fault, by the way. So this lady's car goes to the body shop, and the other driver's insurance says, yeah, we'll pick up the ticket. So they pay to have it fixed. After the car's been fixed and the final check is written to compensate for all the aggravation or whatever, then the story then changes that the air conditioning compressors failed, the batteries failed, and the alternators failed. And the driver now has significant injuries. So the request for me was, can you determine about the mechanical aspects? And it's at this point I'm pretty experienced in the response, because sometimes the other side doesn't know what the menu looks like. And I said, here's what I can offer you. I can tell you if the compressor's working correctly or not. And I can tell you if it's not, is it worn out or is it because of the crash? And I can do the same for the battery and the alternator. Well, this lady, and I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. I've given you the menu. This is what I can do for you. That's it. I'm not going to get involved in personalities. I'm not going to get involved in unreasonable stuff. I'm not going to get involved in the personal injury stuff with the TV attorney. I'm not going to get involved with all that. I'm going to answer your mechanical questions, because that's all I'm really good for. I'm not Judge Judy, and I can't be clairvoyant, and I'm not a doctor, so none of that is in my wheelhouse. You as a consumer has the option, a variety of options that you can do if you have a dispute with, no matter what your service facility looks like, independent, chain store, dealership, traveling guy that, you know, does mobile repair work. You have, and the best opportunity I can tell you in the case of a dispute is the Better Business Bureau has an auto advisory committee. 10 plus more years ago, Ruth Zemek, who was an administrator for the Phoenix Better Business Bureau, and I got together, and we both recognized that auto repair was a huge part of the dispute resolution of the Better Business Bureau. So Ruth...
2 minutes.
Ruth and Mark are completely different. Mark's a cowboy, and Ruth, and I'm just teasing her, Ruth probably burned incense and wore flowers around her neck in college. And I love her dearly. So the two of us sit down, old cowboy and Ruth, Mark and Ruth, and we put together this plan, but the real hitch in the giddy up was is how much authority would this auto advisory committee have? Are they the final determination? And so after a long period of arguing and stuff like that, together we came to the agreement that the committee would give their recommendation and the Better Business Bureau, if they decided to, could overturn it. Good enough. Well, I was the chairman of this committee for years and years and years. I don't know, 5 plus years. And we really did a great job. And in my tenure, the Better Business Bureau never stepped over us, never disagreed with our findings. It had a lot to do with the paperwork we created on the reasoning, what the issues are, and the reasoning and all that kind of stuff. So you're really better served there. There's been times that different people there have an agenda, but here's the deal. There could be 10 to 15 of them voting, so if some guy wants to stick up for all the transmission shops in town, he's just going to be one. That's it. And there's the committee is made up of guys that are from every aspect of car repair. Paint and body, suspension, tires, engines, transmissions, general repair, paint and body. So there's guys that, and they have to have lots of years of experience. They have to have been in the Phoenix Valley area for a very long time, and they have to have a clean record themselves. So if you have a complaint, you don't have to be a member of the Better Business Bureau, but if you have a complaint, you can file your complaint with the Better Business Bureau, and then you can ask that it go in front of the Auto Advisory Committee and see what happens. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Minutes, 21 minutes has just turned after 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're talking cars. If you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We've had some calls to Gil about the gopher issues, and one gentleman said that I should go to the Victor Black Box. I'm going to confess to you something else. I wasn't a part of this, but I did see it happen. This cowboy had this big pasture, and there was gopher holes everywhere, just everywhere. And he was worried about his horses breaking a leg and all that kind of stuff. And so there was a bunch of guys got together, and you've all seen what they call an acetylene torch setup. That's where the guy has a hood, and he's cutting thick metal with this torch. It's a red hot flame, but as you get the metal red hot, then you push this button, which shoots oxygen. And it cuts the metal. So the flame heats it up, but then this oxygen blows a big hole in it. So they decided to take this oxygen tank, or this acetylene tank, and stick it in a couple of gopher holes with the intention of asphyxiating the gophers. And then one guy said to the other guy, he says, they're not going to die, blah, blah, blah. So they get this brilliant idea to take the acetylene tank way far away and to just throw a match at one of the tunnels. You've never seen anything like the explosion that occurred. It was like 100 feet of pipe buried anywhere from 6 inches to 12 inches below the ground. It was like 100 feet of pipe just blew up in the air. 5, 6, 7 feet. It was a sonic boom that went along with that. This happened way back in the 50s, by the way. I have to make it outside of the statute of limitations. So the whole ground had blown up. Nobody ever found a gopher. But now somebody had to get a tractor and a grader to cover up all the ditches that they had just blown up. So if you're fighting with gophers, then forget about the oxygen acetylene. But we do have a caller with a car question. How can I help you?
Hello, Mark.
Yes, sir.
Oh, my. This is Bob. I live up here in North Scottsdale, and I got maybe a three-prong question for you, maybe with opinions involved.
Sure.
All I see advertised anymore are either full electric hybrids or plug-in hybrids. Now, my wife and I are retired. We drive less than 50 miles a day, probably 6 days a week. And they're coming out with plug-in hybrids that are going to give us full electric for that amount. My question to you is, what problems should I foresee? And number two, has the technology moving so fast that it's not going to be worth owning but leasing, because after 3 years, the technology is going to be so advanced that the used car market is not going to be worth anything.
Okay.
What's your opinion?
Well, first of all, I don't like those cars. I don't like the hybrid cars for a variety of reasons, but let's address your other stuff. I've always been a fan of buying stuff. The math and the dollars on a lease don't agree with my philosophy. So I'm willing to buy something. That way, when I sell it, I have all the, you know, some of my money back. I also don't, I'm not paying this payment that's non-recoverable, and it's oftentimes just a dollar less than the payment if I would have financed it. So but first I want to tell you something, Bob. I'm not a financial guru. I do manage, through the businesses that we have that's car repair, multi-millions of dollars, but I have help from my wife and my kids. But I don't like the leasing part. And the reason why I think, in my personal opinion, it's pushed real hard is because it's very lucrative. As far,
right.
As far as the hybrids are concerned, we have to draw a line. We've got all the hybrids to the left, and then we got the Tesla to the right. Now, your wife's probably not going to let you spend $75,000 to $150,000 for a Tesla. But they are the nicest car out there. And the difference being is all the other hybrids are like VW Bugs. And this thing is a Rolls Royce. There's a difference in how far they go, what other creature comforts they had, how fast they'll go, how fast they'll charge. Everything about the Tesla, and I'm not doing a commercial for the Tesla, but it's just head and shoulders above everything else. I think you'd be better off with a small four-cylinder, maybe a turbocharged four-cylinder if you want any pep. But if you don't care about pep, then just get the smallest four-cylinder, a two-door or four-door car, whatever you and your wife agree to, and then take advantage of the 1% or 2% interest rate that you can get on a new car. I also want to tell you that when you start buying this car, it depends on where you're at, but in my opinion, what's going to happen is it's going to be the car, the sales tax, and the license. Then there's a $450 dock fee, and then there's this fee and a desert protection package, and then we got nitrogen in the tires, and we put a fancy coating on your windshield, and your spare tire is painted like a smiley face. You've got all these adds to your ticket, and it can add $2,000 to the overall price of your car. So I'm going to tell you what I told my daughter, Andy. I want you to go, we're going to need a new shuttle bus, and we wanted to get a Dodge Grand Caravan. And we wanted doors on both sides, we wanted six chairs, we wanted rear air for our customers. So Andy says, what's the challenge, Pop? I says, go buy it and write your check for just the sticker. Just the sticker. And she was able to pull that off, because in the sticker they got license plates and license plates and tax. So if you can buy it for the sticker plus $500, that's pretty good. I would do that and take advantage of the 1% or 2% interest. But, again, I'm not a financial guy. But here's what hybrids do that just drive me crazy. You go from here to Payson, and there's two or three big hills, and you got to go up and you got to go down these hills. So you got some hybrid in the right lane, and they're watching the computer screen, and if the speedometer gets red, they're using too much electricity, and if it's green, they're making electricity, and if it's orange, they're walking, and they're doing 42 miles an hour. The whole right lane is tied up because this hybrid's playing his video game, but you get to the top of the hill, and here comes the little rocket ship. And he's flying down the road, and charging his battery.
2 minutes.
It drives me crazy. And I'm not the only one that drives him crazy. But I think that in our life, the hybrids will move and the all-electric will move. I'm just not a fan right now, and people are really surprised and really unhappy in those old hybrids when the battery's $3,000, and that doesn't mean it's installed and reprogrammed. Yeah. So,
well, every automaker, Ford, Nissan, Toyota, they're all working on either some form of electric assist or full electric assist in their lineup. I'm talking in the next 3 to 5 years. It's probably going to be my last car, but right now, if you buy a car the next quarter, this particular vehicle is a Toyota, it qualifies for a $7,500 tax credit because it's a plug-in hybrid. And that makes it basically a $40,000 vehicle, which puts it right in the range of most midsize SUVs.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I don't know about the longevity of what problems you're seeing with batteries and battery assist in your business.
Okay, we only have 30 seconds, so you stay here.
Okay,
it's okay though. But I'm going to leave you with this thought. I am real aware of self-preservation, so I want to tell you that no matter what you and I decide, when you ask me my opinion. And this is called self-defense for car expense. This is called what all of us older guys know that have been married 100 years to the same wife. We all know this. I'm going to side with your wife. That's all there is to it. Four minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Thank you for joining us. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. There's five of them. Bob, on your hybrids. I just don't like hybrids at all. I don't like hybrids. I don't think they're where they need to be, but I understand the process is that we have to buy them, or we have to build them and then sell them and then have them last a while without, you know, major consequences. Everything in a hybrid is quite different than any other car out there. How we charge the batteries, what kind of generators we use, what's the power of the generator, can you get to the highest hill in Arizona and come down the other side and you start with a dead battery and you coast for 2 or 3 miles and you end up with a fully charged battery? The answer is no. Why is the Tesla so far ahead of everybody? I don't know. I don't know and I don't care. But I can tell you this much. Tesla is akin to the finest, most luxury automobile we have. It has talents that the smaller hybrids don't have and may never have. But it's just a really good quality car that has so much automation in it. It's kind of like a house. You can set everything you want and it'll just automatically do that. So I know that some of the Teslas will drive from Phoenix to Payson with no problem. Plus, they have a fast charging system in Payson, so they can plug in there. But I've known a couple of friends of mine with Teslas that can make it all the way to Sholo, which is another 90 miles. So that's almost a 200-mile jaunt from Tempe, where I live, up to Payson and then on up to Sholo. So I'm just not a fan. I'm sorry. I think the gasoline cars and the small diesel cars are far superior, and I think they're less maintenance. And I think it takes a lot less money to fix them because we don't need fancy equipment to talk to the electronics that only works on a particular car. Last but not least, I have a friend of mine that has a hybrid, and it has a charging problem. So it was $500 for them to run the car through this strategic testing procedure. And I'm being facetious here, but you have to drive the car at 17 miles an hour for a mile. Then you have to pull over, shut it off, turn it back on. You have to adjust the rearview mirror, honk the horn twice. You have to make 2 right turns, and then you have to get in the parking lot and do 3 left turns. And then you have to turn the air conditioning off. Then you have to have your wife move from the back seat to the front seat. And I'm being facetious, but you have all of this. It's $500 to do this, and then you may or may not get a battery. But you're going to pay $500 to do it. Can you do it? No. It has to be done exactly right. So the driver, and I got 2 technicians in the car. I got 1 reading and 1 driving. And then if they mess up at step 42, they have to start over. Or they have to go back to 30. So the technology is going to be there someday. it's just not there now. That's kind of what it all works out to be. When it comes to technology and good repair shops, I want to talk about Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. I don't have another shop in Mesa that I can refer you to. I'm sure there's other good shops, but the majority of the ones that have applied to be on Mark Salem's Best Car Repair Shops list were just deficient in one or more things. They have to have insurance. They have to have 5 years in business. They have to have a clean record. They have to have good reviews, or at least more good reviews than bad reviews. They have to have reviews that are in different categories, just like mine. They don't have to match mine, and mine don't set the high standard or the low standard. They just have to be close. That's all, because we're all going to have unhappy customers. So Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing also has a history in Mesa, where the Brian Vivian and then his wife's family also has, they go back to the 60s in gas stations and car repair. So Brian and Thelma have lots of history, and I would imagine since they were very small, they were involved in daddy coming home smelling like gasoline and dirty fingernails. So that's kind of how it works. That's Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing on Main Street just east of Stapley. On the other side of the world, there's Automatic Transmission Exchange. He's at 40th Street in Washington. He's been around and doing transmission work since 1968. He's the only shop in Phoenix area that I can refer you to. Automatic Transmission Exchange does really well at what they do. Phil's been around a long time, and his staff that are trained by Phil are transmission diagnostics experts. So if you call him up and you say, can I stop by and have somebody take a ride because I can duplicate this in less than 5 minutes, then more than likely Phil's going to let you borrow somebody, but you're not going to have him for 30 minutes, and you better be able to duplicate it because you just can't drive around hoping it's going to happen. That's what just a verbal description would take place. So Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. If you take a look at, if you go up and down Washington, anywhere near 40th Street, the north side of the road, there's a transmission shop with a transmission outside. So that's Automatic Transmission Exchange. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960, and the lines are wide open. If you have a car question where the shop told you this, Mark, what do you think about that? Then 602-508-0960. The shop told me that my tires are 10 years old and I have to replace them. 602-508-0960. My shop told me that I absolutely have to use premium gas in my high-performance car. That's because the car maker says that. 602-508-0960. And any other question that you want me to settle with respect to, here's two different viewpoints. How do you land? 602-508-0960. Forty-four minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Let me tell you real quick about Tom Blackwell's shop, Blackwell Automotive. And he's at 40th Street and Greenway. Tom and I have been friends for a very long time. He can do just about anything. He can manufacture parts. He can build parts. He does hot rods. He does simple things like putting fuel injection on hot rods all the way to a bumper-to-bumper restoration that includes the frame, the drivetrain, the interior, the glass, everything. He also does oil changes. He also does tune-ups, and he also does, why is my car overheating or why isn't my air conditioning working? So he's a good guy if you're anywhere near 40th Street and Washington. I'm sorry, Greenway. 40th Street and Greenway, then Blackwell Automotive is a place I think you should try, and I think you'll be happy. Let's go to the phones. Tony, you're up first.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I talked with you last week, and I think you had a couple of guests on, and we were talking about my vehicle. It's a 04 Chevy pickup with 5.3, and I'm trying to remember if this is correct. He said that he could put an exhaust system on my truck. Would that be including headers? And, maybe I got...
Okay.
I got the information wrong.
Okay, what year is your truck?
2004.
Okay. Okay.
I've had it ever since.
Okay. We can't do that. A repair shop can't do that because then we're messing with your emissions. So if we put headers on it, then you're going to have to put cats on it. And if you put headers, you're going to put duals. And that means you have two cats. And by the time you get done, that bill can easily be $4,000. So now there are other things that you can do. We have what we call a cat back exhaust. So the engine, the exhaust manifolds, they feed the catalytic converters that consume unburnt fuel from the engine, and then what comes out of the back cat, of the back of the cat, is usually breathable. So you could do a cat back system, and you could split that and have two exhaust pipes, or you can go from the cat back and just have one exhaust big pipe come out behind the driver's side or the passenger side of your exhaust system or of your truck. But really and truly, okay, you're not going to get anything but a little kind of, you'll get some boy kind of noise, that noise, that thunderous noise that most of us like, and you're going to have a dent in your wallet, and you're not going to get any better fuel economy at all.
Okay, well, one more thing. My truck does have what you just mentioned, one pipe going into a muffler and then two pipes coming out.
Okay.
But I was thinking about headers, but you got to do all that. I'm not going to put $4,000 out. So.
Yeah. Well,
that answers my question. So.
Okay. Now, you could do a cat back, or you could do a muffler back and split those lines, or you could go to Mesa Muffler and have them put a couple chrome tips on there. You could do a lot of things. It's not going to cost any money. You could do a lot of things that's not going to put you in violation of the emission laws. So if you want to just dress it up, tell them to put, I want a little bit more thunder in the muffler, so take the muffler out and give me, on a 1 to 10 scale, I have a 2, I want a 6. And they go, okay, and then you say, and I want chrome tips on the back of my pipe, and I'm on both sides. Fine, we could do that.
Yeah.
And I've been using Mesa Muffler since 1968, so I'm real happy to tell.
They've been around since the 50s. I did business way back then. I live in Mesa, so.
Okay, okay.
They used to be on Main Street, but they moved now.
Yep.
Okay, I just, like I said, I've got a dual exhaust on it now. I'm just going to leave it alone.
Okay. All right. Tony, thank you very much. Kent, you're up. How can I help you?
Hi. Yes. I've got an issue with a 2011 Ford F-150. It's got a 5.0 engine in it. It's been diagnosed as a transmission range sensor, A, which is the park reverse neutral drive low input. It's been working off and on. Sometimes I put the key on. Sometimes the P will light up and I can start it. Sometimes it won't. But they're telling me they got to drop the transmission to replace that part. Is that true?
Well, let's back up. Let's talk about the symptoms a little bit better. When it doesn't start, does it click or no noise at all?
I can make it click. I hear a little clicking under the glove box, you know, in that area. Yeah.
Okay. And so let's get the parameters down. So number one, there's no clicking. Number two, we hear a clicking but no cranking. And number three, it cranks but doesn't start. So what I hear you saying is there may or may not be a click, but it doesn't crank over.
No. When it doesn't start, it'll click.
Okay.
But if it starts, if the light lights up, it'll start.
What light?
The light on the park reverse.
Okay.
Drive.
That's the Prindle.
The key will start.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's called the Prindle. P-R-N-D-L is.
Oh.
It's just the abbreviated.
Yeah.
It's called the Prindle. So.
Okay.
I have two things to say. Number one, I want you to mess with the shifter. So turn your key to the on position, unlock it. I want you to wiggle it around and part up and down. Then I want you to take your hand off and see if it'll start. Then I want you to put it in a neutral, and I want you to wiggle it in neutral and see if it'll start. If it changes there, then it's probably the park neutral switch, which is what you're called the range sensor. But I would sure like you to call back and say, I can start it every time in park, but I can't start it in every time in neutral, but I can't start it in park.
Uh-huh.
That would tell me. Now, number two, you got to look them in the eyes. And if you decide to have them do it, you have to look them in the eyes and you have to say, let me explain something to you. You're not going to call me back. You're not going to put this range sensor in for $200 or $300 or $400, $500, $600, $700 if they're going to have to pull it out, tranny out. You're not going to call me back and say, oh, by the way, we need to put an ignition switch and we need to put a starter or a solenoid or the battery's weak.
Right.
you look them in the eye and you say, I'm not playing. Well, let's try this, let's try that, and I want my old part back. So
yeah.
If you want to do it, you better make sure you're right, because you're not going to call me back. I'm going to be very upset with you. So
yeah.
you're calling their hand. you're saying you better, and people do that to me, and I don't care. It's okay. I enjoy the fact that we're going to have a conversation, and I'm telling you, no. I may call you back because there's an O-ring on the shift shaft, and I want to replace that because it's behind this range sensor. But it's not going to be a lot of money. And I might call you and say, hey, the transmission fluid's really dirty on this. What I'm doing is not a duplication of labor, but I'll save you some old transmission fluid. You want me to service the transmission? One has nothing to do with the other. But the idea is don't let them start selling you things that, you know, that are transmission related.
Right. Well, I got a price of $1,400 to replace that. That seems outrageous.
Okay. I think what we need to do is I think you need a second opinion and take it to what part of town do you live in?
I'm in Glendale, North Glendale.
Okay. I'd probably go to Larry Harker's Auto. And I would say to them, I've got intermittently no start. It clicks, but nothing else. See, here's the problem. That clicking drives me crazy because that could be a starter or a solenoid. So they could go in and do the, I mean, I'm not suggesting they're going to do this, but a shop could go in and replace a starter and solenoid and come out really good looking.
Yeah.
So go to MarkSalem.com and click on FAQ 28. Mark Salem, Salem like the cigarette.com, FAQ 28, and follow that. It's going to teach you how to diagnose the starter or the solenoid by looking at the headlights. So you pull deep into your garage, you can shine your headlights on the wall, and you can start your car. But if you take it to another shop, you just give them the symptoms. Don't tell them anything else. Ask them what their checkout fee is, and then you say to them, I need an estimate when we're done. And I need you to be firm with your estimate. I want to know how much I write my check for before I leave home.
Yeah.
So that's what I want you to do. All righty. And I think I think Harker's would be a good place to start. And I think don't tell them about the $1,400. Don't tell them about anything else. No. Just give them the symptoms, and let's see what happens and see what their checkout fee is.
Sure. Okay.
Okay? Hey, would you call me back and let me know what happened?
I will.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah. Leonard, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes, good morning, Mark. Hey, sorry to tell you that none of my disagreements with my wife involves automobiles, but here's what I do have.
Okay.
I have a 2000 Honda Odyssey with 120,000 miles on it.
Okay.
The owner's manual says at $105,000 you should adjust the valves.
Okay.
I went to a shop, and he gave me a price over $1,000 because of the back four cylinders have a lot of interference to get to them, so there's a lot of labor.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that his shop personally has a Honda Odyssey with over 200,000, and he never adjusted the valves, and he told me that I probably shouldn't unless I had some symptoms.
Ooh, I like him. I like him. I don't need to. You know what? Tell me what the shop's name is.
Good Works.
Okay. I like what you've been told. I like what you've been told. Let's talk about this. If the valves are loose, then you're probably going to have a clatter when it's cold that goes away when it's hot. And if the valves are too tight, you're going to have an intermittent backfire as you throttle up. And you haven't said anything about that at all. Honda wants us to do a valve adjustment all the time, and I'm telling you what I tell my customers. I'm telling you what my staff tells a customer. If you don't have a clatter first thing in the morning, and you never have a clatter, and it never backfires out of the tailpipe, see you later. Go.
Okay.
And that's the way I feel.
I'll save $1,000, huh?
Okay, well, and if the plate passes you in the near future, throw an extra $5 in, right?
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you very much for calling. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
All righty. Oh, boy. Hey, Gil, do you remember the name of the shop?
Oh, which shop?
That he just cited.
I can't. I don't remember.
I didn't write it
doing
down.
Doing something else.
Yeah, it's okay. That's okay. It's okay. So anyway, it's really car repair has to do with just asking questions. You don't have to know anything about cars. You just have to ask the right questions. how sure are you that this is going to fix my vibration? And what happens if it doesn't? How sure are you that I need this particular service? How much is it? And where does it say that in my owner's manual? And then it's symptoms. Please don't go into your shop and tell them what the guy on the internet said or tell them what the mobile mechanic said. Please don't do that. Just tell them the symptoms. And it's so great if your wife's the predominant driver. She writes down all the symptoms. What's the time, temperature? When does it happen? When does it not happen? And when it doesn't happen, what noise does she hear? All that stuff. And tape that to the rearview mirror. And when you take your car in, ask them what their checkout charge is and say, my wife's description's hanging off the rearview mirror. That's it. We'd like to talk to the primary driver.
2 minutes.
Especially if that's the situation where husband's driving and it never happens to him and the wife does and it happens to her. Maybe she puts 100 miles on it and he puts 5 miles on it. We don't know. And to ask that question is premature because we'll be able to answer that question once we fix it. So a lot of times the questions are not appropriate. They'll be answered when the car is fixed. So why does my car not move first thing in the morning? And say, well, why don't we just work on it doesn't move first thing in the morning? Because it could be a lot of things. So what's the most predominant one? I'm not going to guess. I'll tell you in the morning. So then you call back and say, it was 2 quarts low on oil. That's the answer to your question is why it's 2 quarts low on oil. But don't ask any questions about why this. Just give them information and make sure that you look them in the eye and you say, you know, what's your checkout? Most everybody's checkout on the low side is going to be like $50 to $75. And we're already seeing $150 to $200 on the checkout. And I need to defend both people because there's a lot of stuff that we're going to be able to diagnose depending on the skill level of your technicians. Diagnose pretty quick. But the ticket has to be written. It has to go through parts. It has to be dispatched. The technician's got to drive it. He's got to do a little bit of work. So $50, $75 is pretty cheap, especially if they're $100 an hour. Then basically he's going to have more than 30 minutes in it. I can promise you that. So when you look at that, it's a big deal. But just have a conversation with him. And if you feel bad and if you're not feeling warm and fuzzy, then say thank you very much and go somewhere else. And the best place to find the best car repair shop in town is go to the local auto parts store and say, who's the guy that buys parts and never returns them? He always pays his bill, and he seems to fix the car first every time. So he's not putting on a starter, oh, that didn't work. Let's do this. Let's do that. Let's do this. 602-508-0960.
It's Mark.
Chevrolet. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem. And you know, they have that little disclaimer at the beginning of every hour. It said this is paid programming and all that kind of stuff. That doesn't really apply to me because I have nothing to sell you. I don't thump my chest and tell you my shop's the best shop in the whole valley or the state of Arizona. As a matter of fact, most of you don't even know the name of my shop because I try to avoid that. I'm not selling you real estate. I'm not selling you jewelry. I'm not selling you something that's going to clean out your colon. I'm not selling you investment advice. I'm not telling you that I can buy your car cheaper than everybody else in the whole world. None of that applies. They still play that, and it's okay with me. But I just want to remind you, I have nothing to sell you. I'm doing my best to give you advice. It's also important to understand, I started in a gas station at Ken's Broadway Shell, Broadway and Priest, when I was at Tempe High School in 1968. And then in 1979, as a policeman, after I graduated high school from 72 to 79, almost 80, then I opened up a mobile station in Ahwatukee, and then we went to Guadalupe and McClintock for a 6-bay, and now we're in a 20-bay shop in Tempe. The idea is I've been a master tech for a very long time. We've repaired lots of cars, and I know right from wrong. I'm just able to hide behind my mask because I can talk frankly, and I think people appreciate that. And every once in a while I'll offend somebody, but the fix on the offense is I'm sorry. You know, I'm just sorry. Action Auto Repair's up at I-17 in Deer Valley. He's been around a long time, since 1983, and I've known Tom since 1983. So if you're looking for a good shop at I-17 in Deer Valley or 5-6 miles all the way around it, and you don't already have a good shop, or maybe you want to compare one shop to the other, then I'd like to suggest Action Auto Repair, northwest corner, I-17 and Deer Valley in Phoenix. And he served the particular area of Deer Valley and North Phoenix for a very long time. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or a car problem. One of the things that you want to try to avoid is when you take your car into an auto parts store and that three-whiskered kid comes out to plug his little cigarette pack into your car, you're not going to get anything except a sales pitch based on what he thinks is wrong with your car. And I want to tell you that the success rate of that is not even close to 40%. And here's why. We have codes, and they read the codes, and then they look at the sheet, and the sheet says, this is an oxygen sensor, blah, 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 blah. And they go, well, you have four oxygen sensors, and I can't really tell which one it is, so how about I just sell you four, and you install all four? It's my belief that this is a sales tool to sell lots of parts. I want to tell you that half the time we have an O2 sensor, oxygen sensor problem, it's not the oxygen sensor. We can have a plugged-up fuel filter that causes an oxygen sensor code. There's a big difference in the replacement of the code of the fuel filter and a lot of other stuff. The idea is that the code and the name behind the code is rarely going to match. It's just a lottery system unless you do the checkout. For instance, if the fuel filter's plugged up, then we take the car out on the road and we can't get it. The oxygen sensor is supposed to say lean, which means I don't have enough fuel, and rich, which means I have too much fuel. So you plug in a scanner. Now, this is a scanner that costs thousands of dollars as opposed to that little cigarette package that he uses to plug in underneath your dash. So we drive down the road, and we should expect that, let's just pretend for sake of argument that we have a 1 through 5 voltage range. So we want the O2 sensor to dance around the middle. If we throttle up hard, it should go to the rich side, a little too much fuel. And if we're going down a hill and we back off the throttle, it should go to the lean side. But this is at the blink of an eye. So you can look at the overall averages and stuff, but it's very fast. So you go drive the car, and no matter what, it's sitting there at 1 volt. The oxygen sensor's asleep going 1 volt, 1 volt, 1 volt. So that's a lean condition. So you artificially inseminate the motor with propane, and all of a sudden the oxygen sensor comes back. And all of a sudden it's dancing around 2.5, a little high, a little low, and in the blink of an eye. So you go, okay, I have a substandard fuel delivery. You pull out the fuel filter, you put it to your lips, you blow through it. You remember how Louis Armstrong used to blow his trumpet and his cheeks would blow up into the size of tennis balls? That's exactly what a technician looks like when he's blowing on a fuel filter that's plugged up. There's some prima donnas that would never put their lips on a fuel filter, but there's a hell of a lot more of us that have and continued. Because if you have an old one and a new one, you blow through the old one, it, and you can't do nothing. You blow through the new one, it's like blowing through a straw. We're done. That's all there is to it. The code simply says that the problem is in Ohio, and you have to figure out what city, what street, what house number. That's what it's all about. The diagnostic process of the code is tracking it backwards. It's not uncommon for us to have a code where, and I'll say it this way, maybe 10% of the time we have a bad electrical connection or we have a vacuum leak somewhere, 10% of the time. So plugging in a vacuum line, it's not uncommon for us to charge $80 to find the vacuum line and then $1.50 to plug it in. That's the way it is. So it's really a matter, and when you have the troubleshooting and you have the diagnostic cost and then you have this needs to be done, you always ask for your old part back. You always do. And they'll tell them to put it in the original box, wrap it with some tissue or wrap it with a shop towel or wrap it with newspaper, put it in the trunk. You don't want it to smell up the car. But you need the old part, and here's why. You just spent $400, and the light comes back on. You go to a different auto parts store. The three-whiskered kid goes, oh, you have a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And you already know that the first time was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. and actually codes are a PO or something like that with two-digit numbers, PO87, who cares? So you go back to the first shop, and you say to them, you were supposed to fix this code, and the code came back virtually immediately. So here's my old part. Let's just reinstall my own part, and you give me credit for that part. And give me credit for the diagnosis, and we'll just start all over again. You're going to find out what kind of shop you're dealing with when you say that. And the reason I bring that to your attention is I preach it to my customers. We put the old part in the car, and we have at least 10 to 15% of our customers that get mad at us over that. Now, we're not going to put a fuel filter in your car. We're not going to do something that's going to stink up your car. We're going to put your filthy, dirty cabin filter in the box, and we're going to tell you, go home, stand over the trash can, and open the box, and you'll see that there's 47 pounds of dirt in your filter, and that's the reason why you had substandard da-da-da-da-da. So most of us give it. If we do a motor mount, there's no smell to a motor mount. Put it in the box and give it to you. Anything we do, a fan clutch, a MAP sensor, an oxygen sensor, I'm just thinking of dancing around the fuel system, or spark. A spark plug, a wire, a coil. Just ask for your old parts back. Now, there's two reasons why the shop should ask for their old parts back. Number one, it reduces his trash bill. And I'm making a joke about that. And number two, it really instills confidence. Here's your old part back. If you want to go have it tested, I know that we can test just about every part you have in your hand. It's pretty easy. We understand what they're supposed to do. We understand what they're supposed to say. We understand everything. I'll give you an example. The mass airflow sensor measures the amount of air that is being inhaled by your engine. Now, let's pretend it's still that 1 to 5 volt. So at idle, the voltage should be kind of 1. If you take it out and drive it, and you give it to your 16-year-old kid, and he decides that he wants to do something stupid like drag race somebody, when his foot's on the floor, it'll be 5. 1 and 5. It's that simple. I make it sound simple, but it's really not, but I'm just using generalities. So with the mass airflow sensor, it's really easy to check it out. And sometimes the hose that connects the mass airflow sensor to the mouth of the engine, it's old and it's brittle and it opens and they have folds in the hose. So you'll have a big crack. Now we have unmetered air being inhaled by the engine. So the engine says that, or the mass airflow sensor says that I'm sending 13 on a 20 scale of air to the motor, but in reality the motor's getting 15. So we have a disconnect there because we have two different numbers. So we look at the hose that connects the mass airflow sensor to the mouth of the engine, and whew. Now you go and you fill that up with duct tape and you clear the code and you go drive it, and voila, the numbers are okay. So then you call the customer and bid a hose. You don't leave the duct tape on there because underneath hood temperatures will typically just wipe the duct tape off. So that's kind of how it works. That's what's behind the scenes. And I can tell you that 30 to 40% of the shops in the valley are really good at what they do. I can tell you that 20% of the shops in the valley have decided to go from transmissions to check engine lights, and that's like a doctor who's a chiropractor decides to go into brain surgery, or the other way around. A guy that's a brain surgeon decides to go into transmissions. It's just craziness to think that they're qualified to do this without any certification on the wall or anything like that at all. So you got those kinds of dynamics. The older the shop and the longer it's been run by the same management team, whether it's husband and wife or whatever, and you look at their reviews, you'll find good shops that way. You'll find good shops where the people truly, their customers truly love them. And you'll see all kinds of reviews like, I've been doing business with him for 15 years. And he's never let me down. And there's a 5-star review. But I want to tell you, just like everybody else, I have reviews that are bad. And the one that I can think of is two guys. Guy number one buys two Corvettes. Guy number two is kind of way over here. So we think we're going to deal with guy number one, and we're going to bring these Corvettes from the graveyard up to where they're dependable automobiles. It gets ugly. because we have two masters. So the first guy says, talk to me about it. Here's your symptom. You said, here's the repair, and this is what we're going to do. The second guy's on the internet talking to all the people on the internet, and he's the problem. So this turns into a really ugly situation, and ultimately the engine fails in one of these Corvettes. Folks, we don't have a crystal ball. We can't tell you when the tire's going to blow out or the belts blow off your car or when your timing belt's going to let go or when your fuel pump quits working in the tank. We can't do that. If we had a crystal ball, we'd be in Las Vegas. We wouldn't be working on cars. So I admit that I've got some problems, not a lot, but I've had some bad reviews. We had a lady who was mad because her air conditioning compressor wasn't still in warranty. And I think the thing she said that really wound up my underwear was, is I'm a single mother. As if that was the magic word that I should cave in. Well, one of my daughters is a single mother, so I didn't like that. I didn't like that conversation at all. So nevertheless, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. So it's 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. There's four lines available. If you want to jump in, you can. 602-508-0960 if you have a car question. This is some, and Mark, I'm going to get to you in just a second. This is something that just really upsets me. I saw a work order the other day that this is what the shop wrote. It was $600 worth of work. Your battery cables are showing signs of corrosion. Oh, you have no idea how that made me feel. Then they said, it appears you have a leak at the upper radiator hose. And I'm thinking to myself, why don't you guys just put a wrench or a screwdriver or a nut driver on that clamp and tighten it up? Why don't you just do that? Why don't you pressure test the cooling system? The cap says it's 14-pound capability, so you pressure test it at 15. You see, oh, yeah, it's leaking. You put a clamp, you tighten up the clamp, and it stops leaking. Come on. Then it says, based on time, you need a complete front-end rebuild. Well, how convenient is that? Here's the key. When you need a front-end rebuild, you're going to have some tire wear and some clunking going on underneath. That's all there is to it. Those are the two symptoms that suggest and that say clearly that you need some front-end work done. Abnormal tire wear and clunking when you take off or when you stop. And everybody can say, I could say that to 99% of the cars that come in, your battery cables show signs of corrosion. That's an easy way to clip you for $40 to $80 because we're going to clean your battery. Corrosion is just part of owning a car and a battery. And unless it ain't starting, then you don't really need to worry about it. Unless it looks like a big white piece of marshmallow over the top of your battery cables, then yes. But when you use fancy words like appears, those are words just to keep you away from the Attorney General's office, the fraud division. That's all that is. Mark, good morning. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Hey, this is a call to basically give you the ultimate compliment. I don't know diddly squat about cars and never really wanted to, other than to know it was going to get me from A to B, and it does. But I got to tell you, I listen to you every Saturday, almost your whole show, at least every opportunity I get, because I love listening to your diagnoses on all these various things that come up, and I'm amazed at your ability. I mean, multiple years of doing it, but it blows me away how you can diagnose basically any problem that most callers give you a buzz about, and I just wanted you to know that it's incredibly entertaining and ultimate respect for what you do.
Thank you. Thank you. Let me just comment on that. You'll notice that when we have callers, it's kind of give and take. I ask questions, and they answer me, and there's always yes, no, or I don't know. Right. That's the easy part. You'll also know that I'm not interested in what the technician on Google says or what you found from your next-door neighbor, because they've diagnosed it, and they had the car in front of them, and they're going to be wrong more than they're going to be right. It really has to do with that, and here's what it really is a derivative of. I started in 1988 on the radio, and it became very apparent that this isn't TV, so you better draw a picture with your mouth. And I've learned how to do that really well, except to my wife, and she complains that I didn't get from, you know, I didn't get what you said from what you said. And then I have to sit her down and talk about the oxygen sensor and the air filters.
Exactly.
But anyway, thank you for your compliment. I actually wrote it down that your compliment came at 59:47. And the reason I do that is because I'm going to tape our conversation and give it to my wife and tell her that some other Mark appreciates my ability to explain. And, you know, not too long ago, she had a problem with her car, and I said, I want you just to manually shift it, and she did. And then I said, okay, now just shut the key off, wave a dead chicken around your head, honk the horn twice, and that's when she uses bad words. And then I said, okay, just drive it home, but just leave it in drive. And, yeah, it was fine. And it was the selector switch. And so as she ratcheted up her shift, I said, take the shifter, push the button, and go park low, roughhouse it. And that fixed it for a while. But, yeah, as long as I can have that two-way conversation, it means a lot. Now, before you hang up, do you know me? Are you my brother? Or
no. No, we've never met. I do not know you.
Okay.
It's a sincere compliment.
All righty. Well, thank you for that. You made my whole day.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you
all
very
right,
much.
Have a good one.
Uh-huh. Action Auto. Oh, no, not Action. I already talked to you about Action. Auto Dynamics is in Sun City. Auto Dynamics has been around since 1982. If you're looking for a good shop, a great shop, an honest shop in Sun City, then Auto Dynamics is on the north side of Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue. And who might that be, Gil?
That's Richard.
Richard, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. I got a 2016 Kia Sorento.
Okay.
Four-cylinder.
Okay.
I'm getting hesitations when I step on the gas. Sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not. Especially if I'm going up on ramp, it's a little more. Took it to my mechanic. He said the pressure on the fuel pump was normal. He found four foul spark plugs, which were put in 20,000 miles ago, which is kind of strange. It ran all right for a couple of days. Then the same problem came out again. He pulled the plug. They were not. There was nothing wrong with the plugs again. So I'm kind of stumped.
Okay. You're not the only one. There's three of us.
Can a fuel pump go off and on? Can the pressure change under certain circumstances of the fuel pump?
Let me change your question. Mark, what are the symptoms of a fuel pump failure that's in the fuel tank? And I say, well, first of all, mileage. So, Richard, how many miles are on your Sorento?
116,000. Okay. And I also, the filter is in the tank.
Okay. When you have a fuel pump, it typically, on a 1 to 10 scale, is only capable of a 3 or a 4 in pressure, which means we hear this. It's really hard to start in the morning cold, and I can't get past 49 miles an hour. So I can go 45, but if I push it to the floor and want to go 55, it won't go there. Well, that's substandard fuel flow. In
right.
addition to that, you're probably going to have an oxygen sensor screaming, I need more fuel. Because we've got a substandard pressure and delivery of the fuel. The spark plugs, that's what really is. Having fouled spark plugs, that's just, I would fire a technician if he said that. I don't care about fouled. If you think they're fouled, are they fouled with brown? Are they fouled with oil? Are the electrodes wiped out? Have they been overheated and the porcelain is white as can be? Just having spark plugs fouled, what a wussy statement. Wouldn't it have been nice if he had walked out and handed you the old spark plug and a new spark plug and say, look, but you and I both know that the spark plugs didn't fix it. And probably, if you had the fuel pump done, that didn't fix it either. So you have a hesitation. I'd be looking at the throttle position sensor. I'd be looking at vacuum leaks. I'd be looking at the EGR opening and closing. I'd be looking at a lot of that kind of stuff. But here's the only option you got. You take it back to him and you look him in the eye and said, I think we should start with a credit here because I paid you to fix this. I still have the problem. And between the two things that you did, I'm $300 out of pocket, $400, whatever you're at.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you should and that's a nice conversation to have. You'll figure out whether this guy likes you or not. But the idea is now, if those are the original spark plugs, 116,000 miles, I'd probably keep those. They're not?
No, I had them changed at 90,000.
Now I'm even madder. The other thing you can do, do you pay with a credit card?
No.
Okay, you should have. You always pay with a car repair with a credit card. You could give him an opportunity. Do you want to take a chance in fixing this right now without any agreement on money? He says no. You say fine. You go get it fixed. You say now the hesitation's gone. You call your credit card company and you say, here's two. And stay right there. We'll be right back. It's after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're taking calls. And let me tell you real quick about Kurt's Auto Repair, I-17 and Bell Road. There isn't anything we've discussed today, last week's show, the week before show, that Kurt's couldn't have found and fixed. But I'll even go further than that. Larry Harker's Auto could have done it. Thompson's could have done it. Blackwell could have done it. Action could have done it. Auto Dynamics could have done it. And Kurt's could have done it. For the list of my best car repair shops, go to marksalem.com and click on Best Car Repair Shops. Let's go back to Richard. Richard, did you get the old spark plugs back?
No, I did not. Okay. He said they were black. He said they were real black.
Okay. Well, black would have caused the catalytic converter to, it's running rich. It's got more fuel than it deserves. So catalytic converter will smell like rotten eggs because we're flooding the catalytic converter with fuel. Black would indicate that your wife drives it to the liquor store two blocks away and brings it back home. I'm going to guess that doesn't happen.
I drive it every day about 250 miles on an Uber.
God. He should have known at 90,000, and you said it was something, let me see what you said, it had 110. He should have known those spark plugs were brand new. He should have known that.
Yeah.
But, and you know what? If you said to me, Mark, just give me a cuff, off the cuff, what's causing my hesitation? I'd say a lean condition. And a lean condition is the opposite of black spark plugs.
Well, you know, another thing, the tailpipe has always been real black. And I've come up behind other cars, the same four-cylinder ones I can tell by the back of them. And they're not black like mine.
Yeah.
What would cause that?
We don't care about that. That has nothing to do with fixing a car. Now, if you had an engine that was running raw fuel through it, then you would have never passed your emissions test the last 2 or 3 years. You would have never passed it.
Well, the car's so new, I don't even have to pass the emissions.
Okay. You don't have any check engine lights on, do you?
No check engine lights.
Okay.
And
well,
he says there's nothing. When he puts the computer on, he shows nothing.
Okay. All right. I'm just telling you, this is the worst of our industry. I'm not happy about this. You shouldn't be happy about this. You spend a bunch of money, and you're no closer to the repair than you were before. And the idea that we're going to use
the other problem is, Mark.
Yeah.
It may run for 5 hours perfect, then all of a sudden it starts doing it.
That's fine. But he told you he's going to fix it. And he didn't.
No, I know that. And
if that's the case, then here, I'm going to tell you. Richard, here's the deal. If it's an intermittent hesitation, you have two choices. I'll start guessing, or let's wait till it gets worse and easier to find, or three, let's wait till we get a check engine light. Maybe the check engine light will send me in the right direction.
Right, okay.
But
it's pretty scary when you're making a left turn. All of a sudden, the nose just dies on you, and you got to kind of pump the throttle, get it going again.
Okay. It could very well be that the throttle position. Now, the only on one side of a turn, that's kind of confusing. This may not be an easy thing, but what you're hoping for is it's going to get worse and easier to find.
Right, I understand that.
So, and no check engine light means we're not pouring a bunch of fuel out of the tailpipe. And this is probably going to be something to do with the module or something like that that's shutting off all the cylinders. And then when you turn, the car leans to the left and then the right comes up. And now we've got a bad connection, all that kind of stuff. But don't go back there. I'd go back there and ask him if he still has the old spark plugs. But it doesn't make sense that he used the black spark plug as something. That doesn't make sense. But anyway, Richard, thank you very much. Good luck to you. And let me move on. Nathan, you're up next.
Hey, Mark. Thanks.
You bet.
I got a 15-year-old Chevy pickup truck, and the headliner fabric is starting to come away from the foam cushion. I was wondering what your thoughts were, the best way to get that back in shape.
What part of town are you in?
Gilbert.
Okay. I think Top Notch is still opened in Mesa. His name was Ken. And we had him do, and if he's still in business, we're still having him do all of our upholstery work and stuff like that. I would call a couple of upholstery shops, and the conversation was down like this. I got an old Chevy pickup truck, and the headliner's starting to wrap around my head, and it's embarrassing because people think I can't see and stuff like that. So do you do headliners? And they're going to say yes or no. And you say, this is a pickup truck. This is a Chevy pickup truck with just two doors. It's not the extended cab, or it's got four doors, and it's the crew cab. So, and you give them a verbal description of it, and then can you tell me what the headliner would cost? Then I'd call a dealer, and I'd say, how much did you charge to put a headliner in it? Because some of them are cardboard and kind of easy to put in. So that's how I would work it out. I would call it, if the upholstery shop doesn't do headliners, then you say to the upholstery shop, if your wife had a pickup truck and the headliner's come down, where would you call? Who would you use? And I don't have anybody out in Gilbert other than I want you to look up Top Notch and tell Ken that I sent you. I don't get any bird dog fee or anything like that. I think he'll just treat you extra nice if he knows. And we've been friends for a long time. But if not, Body Shop, and you can call Thompson's in Mesa and ask Brian, who would you use? I don't even have anybody in my Tempe area that I know I would use, but I know that I could find it. I would call Paint and Body Shop and ask them who does it. Or I'd call somebody who sold automotive paint, and I would say to them, what shop in my general area is really a good shop and does a good job and that might do headliners? And they may say, hey, call ABC Auto. So that's kind of how if you'll send me an email, mark@marksalem.com, I'll ask around for you. Thank you, Nathan. Thank you very much. I got to take a break. And Don and Warren, you stay right there. We'll be back. Well, 43 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, we're going straight to the phones like we promised. And Don, you're up next.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, question is, took my S10, my fuel pump out on my S10, so replaced the regulator and the fuel pump, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Go through emissions. The guy goes, okay, you disconnected your computer. I disconnected the battery like we were supposed to. It wouldn't pass because of drivability that it's used to?
No, it's the monitors hadn't been reset because you disconnected the battery. In the old days, we'd disconnect the battery, clear the memory on the computer, and we'd pass through emissions. Today, we can't do that because when you disconnect the battery, it wipes the memory. And we need to see that the monitors, and there's a lot of monitors, we need to see far left and far right and then where the monitor's at. So that's the reason why he failed.
Yeah, so they gave me this long spiel. What do? Just drive it normally?
Yeah. Just drive it normally. And, you know, you can stop by a garage. Is this Don, the tow truck driver?
Yeah.
Okay.
That guy.
Okay. Just stop. Of all the shops you've got, just drive it and then, you know, put 100 miles. See, here's the deal. In order to get rid of the monitors, and you think I'm joking, I'm going to tell you the truth. Start the car up when the temperature is between 80 and 82. Drive the car slowly for the first mile. Make a right turn, make a left turn, honk the horn, roll the windows down, roll them back up, shut it off, and let it cool down for an hour. This is the kind of process. It takes two guys to clear the monitors, one to talk and one to drive. Go 15 miles an hour for three miles. Where are you going to go 15, and don't stop, where are you going to go 15 miles an hour and never stop?
Well, down on Queen Creek, you're okay. Out to the Firebird.
Okay, you okay. Know. But that's what's going on. And everybody has the ability to plug in and go, oh, all your monitors are reset. You go down, they plug into your computer, they don't even do the tailpipe test, boom, you're done. But that's what you have to do is reset the monitors. Okay, now the next person that...
I was up your way yesterday, and I saw on the 87, that's terrible looking.
Terrible looking what?
The fire.
Oh, yeah.
That's terrible. No, I had to go to Chinle yesterday and do some... recovery stuff yesterday.
All righty. Listen, thanks, Don.
All right.
You're on your own, buddy. Thank you. Warren, you're up next. How can I help you?
I've got a Ford Expedition. It's a 2010. Everything seems to work good, but then you're just going down the road, it just stops. And you just have to restart it, and then you go on your way. It's kind of intermittent. There's no lights. There's no clue or anything that gives me... I just wondered, you know, your show's on, so I just figured, hey, give you a call. See what you say.
Let me ask you some questions. When the engine dies, do you have any idea where the fuel tank might be, the level might be?
you know, it could vary. You know, I look at it, you know, it's, I haven't really looked at it that much.
Does your wife drive it?
I couldn't really answer that. I drive it. My wife drives it.
Okay.
But it's just like, it just cuts
out.
No,
I know. This is the give and take port. I don't care about that. I'm going to ask you some questions to get closer. Does the vehicle typically go between quarter and half or half and three quarters, or do you run it three quarters to full? About.
I'll fill it up, and then it gets down to empty, and then you fill it back up again.
Okay, so I want you to pay attention to if the fuel gauge, the electric fuel pump is in the tank, okay? And we need to cool it with gasoline. So if you're a high school kid and you're driving around and you're running off the bottom eighth of your tank, the fuel pump's not going to be cooled and lubricated by the gasoline in the tank. That's why I'm asking. So if you're running off it now, the second part of the question is when it dies, you probably put it in neutral and coast to the side of the road. Yes or no?
Correct.
Okay. When you go to start it, does it start immediately? Or do you have to crank it?
It might take a second try.
Okay. This is what I want you to try. I want you, when that happens, pull off to the side of the road. I want you to put it in neutral is fine. Turn the key off. Count to five. Turn the key on all the way to the start crank position. Don't go into crank. So you're going to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then you're going to turn it off. Then you're going to turn it back on, and you're going to count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You're going to do that three times. And then you're going to say, Mark, it starts every time I do that. Well, we just primed the fuel pump, and so it sure looks like a fuel pump, but we need to change the filter first, too. We need to put it to our lips and see if we can blow through it or if we can't. So, yes, this can be a fuel problem. If you find out that if you keep it three-quarters and north of that, then the problem is far less predominant, you still have a bad fuel pump. It's far less predominant because you're filling it up with fuel. We do more fuel pumps for the people at ASU than any place else because those kids run off the bottom eighth of their tank. So that's kind of why I'm asking you where the fuel is. But the second point is let's cycle the key three times, and then let's hit the key, and if it starts right up, then we've lost prime. So is it because of the pump? Is it because of the fuel pressure regulator? What's going on? How many miles are on your Expedition?
I think about 80,000.
Okay. And have you owned it since it was new, 20 years ago or 10 years ago?
No, I think it was second.
Okay.
Second owner.
Well, the other thing is if you have a garage that loves you, then it's not uncommon for us to put a fuel pressure gauge and tape it to the outside of the windshield so where the driver can see it, and then run the hose underneath the crack of the hood and connect it to a port. And we say, hey, look, we started up and it's at 45 pounds. I want to know if that changes. And then you call back and you go, hey, when it dies, I noticed that the gauge drops to 10. Well, we're three-quarters there. Now, we don't do that for free. We charge a rental, and then that gauge is also expensive, so if somebody cuts the hose and steals it from your windshield, you're going to have to buy us a new one. But oftentimes...
Yeah, well, sometimes on your guesswork, it's just easier without all the testing and everything, just replace the part and see if that works.
You can do that if you want. Your success rate is about 25%.
You know.
I mean, 80,000 miles isn't something that's bothering me. I was hoping you'd say that it had 150,000, and I'd say the pump's going to need it anyway. I mean, 150,000 miles is six times around the girth of the Earth, so that's a long way. But you haven't even done three times. You've done just past three. It's 25,000 miles around the equator. You've done it three times plus. Right. So now, but if you can find a shop,
it's shorter to just go through the Earth.
Well, you can do what you can do. I mean, but you're going to do the fuel pump, then you're going to do the fuel pressure regulator, then somebody's going to say it's the control module, then somebody's going to say it's the ECM, and then somebody's going to say, it's the injector driver. What are you going to do then? After you have $3,000 worth of work and you still have the problem? This is a diagnostic. This is a diagnosable problem. It really has to do with you. If we can train you what to do and what to look for, you'll save yourself $100 if you'll just try that cycle the key on three times.
Okay.
And so you say, hey, it starts every time I do that. We're halfway there. So anyway, thank you. Good luck to you, Warren. And Jerry, you're up next. Jerry, how can I help you?
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking the call. Love your show.
Thank you.
Got a 85 CJ7 It's been parked at my parents' house for, I don't know how many years now, quite a few, and sold the house, and I had to bring it home. So drove down to Tucson, picked it up, put it on one of those tow dollies from U-Haul, and left it in neutral, pulled off the side of the road once or twice, checked it out, everything seemed fine. Right when I get home, getting ready to take it off the dolly, I noticed there's a bunch of transmission fluid. It looked like what happened is, I don't know what happened. All of a sudden, there's transmission fuel all over the bottom, and it looks like it's leaking where the drive shaft goes into the transmission.
Yeah.
But I'm nervous. What do I do? Did I blow the transmission? I got to obviously get a battery and do some things, figure it out. But
well, how many inches were the front wheels off the ground on your tow dolly? 5, 10, 15 inches?
Oh, well, I don't know what they are. Maybe 10.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe 10 inches off the ground.
Well, it doesn't like that because the fluid level is supposed to be below the seal. And now all of a sudden you lifted the front end up and you flooded the seal. So if I were my Jeep, I'd wash everything up, I'd put fresh gas in it, and I'd go drive the heck out of it, and I'd park it someplace where I could watch to see if it's leaking. I'm betting you, I'm 85% sure it's not going to leak once you get the front wheels down on the ground. I'm 85% sure that you didn't wipe out the transmission, because if you wiped out the transmission.
Yeah, that's where I thought it didn't make any sense, but I thought the transmission was in neutral.
Yeah, well, I would have told you to put it in neutral on the shifter from the two-wheel drive to four-wheel drive. I would have had you disconnect the rear wheels at the transfer case. But even if, is it a manual? Oh, it's got to be an automatic. So it doesn't make any difference. What?
Oh, it's 85, CJ.
I know, but is it an automatic or standard?
Standard.
Okay. It's a standard.
Or stick shift.
And it's coming out of the back of the transmission.
Yeah,
but
it looks like it.
Well, the transmission feeds the transfer case, and then the transfer case feeds the front differential and the rear differential.
There's nothing forward of the transmission. Nothing, no oil or anything other than just it. You know.
Okay, you're going to have somebody look at it for you, because I can't make heads or tails. I mean, we have the transmission, and it feeds the transfer case, which then transfers power. And the transfer case has two drive shafts. One goes forward, one goes back. So I'm trying to visualize the Jeep. But you know what? Just start it up, check the fluid levels in the transmission, and take it down and have somebody say, you know, would you check and tell me where the leak was at? I think, though, if it was dry when you picked it up and it's wet when you got to Phoenix, I think that the front wheels might have been too high. But I think the chances of you wiping out the transmission are kind of slim and none. Anyway, good luck to you, Jerry. Go ahead.
Is there any place in Phoenix that you like Jeep, like for Jeeps?
This is not a Jeep thing. This is it doesn't make any difference. This is not a Jeep thing. What part of town do you live in?
North Phoenix.
Okay. Northeast, northwest?
Northeast, 101 and 51.
I take it over to Blackwell at 40th Street and Greenray and tell him Mark Salem says you have about one prayer in hell of fixing this car. But he said that you would try. And he said that he said that if you can fix it, he'll buy lunch the next time we go to McDonald's. So I'm sure Blackwell can help you with this.
I appreciate it very much.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
You betcha. You know, I want to tell you ladies, we don't do too much about the ladies, but those of you that go up to Payson, those of you that go up to Pine, Strawberry, those of you that go to Sholo, that you come up to the mountains, there is a, well, and I get in trouble for this, antique store, a vintage store, a collectible store, or a junk store. Anyway, it's called Fancy Finds. And as you go into Pine from Payson, and Pine is probably 20 minutes north of Payson, as you go in Pine and you're heading kind of up towards Strawberry, about halfway through the city on the right-hand side is a building called Fancy Finds. That's where my wife's at right now. Wives love that place. And this couple of times I've had to go with her. It's wives and husbands, but wives just love it. So if you're into the vintage, the collectibles, the old stuff, then treat your wife and go to Pine and look at Fancy Finds. Or if you're passing through, look at Fancy Finds. Or if you go up towards Forest Lakes and you're going to go up to 260 up towards Heber, then it's 20 minutes in and 20 minutes out. So I get to do commercials for free because I pay for the hour. I do know that ladies like to go to those kinds of places. And I'm a I'm not exactly your normal spokesman for the junk shops, and I'm going to get in trouble for using junk, so the collectible shops. But the idea is that my wife enjoys being there. She works a couple days a week there. She also has some stuff that she's had in the barn that she tightened up the legs and she did different stuff and painted stuff. And she also has some of her stuff there. But this is not an effort to get you to go up there and buy my wife's stuff. I'm just telling you ladies, just you ladies, that it's a pretty fun place. And it's very, very busy. So it's called Fancy Finds. And Renee or Sherry will be the two that you'll talk to. And tell them that Mark Salem is going to send you a 50% coupon. 50% off on your coupon. And they're going to look at you with a look of disdain. And I don't care. So anyway, mark@marksalem.com is my email address. mark@marksalem.com. Marksalem.com is my website, marksalem.com. We have the frequently asked questions, and these are questions that have been asked numerous times over the last 20 years or more. Actually, 32 years. So there's also the list of best car repair shops, and there's lots of other car information. So marksalem.com, and there's lots of stuff that you might find interesting. And the FAQs, more than anything else, as well as the list of the best car repair shops. So until then, my email address is mark@marksalem.com. If you have a question, I'll answer it personally and put your phone number. So if I can call you, I will.